You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. 1 October is a heinous marker in our country's history. October 1st, 2017, becoming America's deadliest mass shooting in modern history at the Route 91 Harvest Musical Festival across the Las Vegas Strip from Mandalay Bay. 58 people died that late Sunday evening, and more than 800 were injured. As a journalist, I was there, listening to emergency responders, families, and victims sharing their voices. Mass shootings are hard to fathom until confronted with that level of violence, but it's a reality that is growing in numbers and death toll. 15 of the deadliest mass shootings have happened since 2000, 7 in the last 5 years alone, 3 of which I personally experienced as a journalist, and unfortunately, there are more that I covered that didn't make the list. A Las Vegas trauma surgeon is taking their experience from the mass shooting and funneling it into research to help others in emergency response. Dr. Deborah Cools is a trauma and critical care surgeon at University Medical Center, UMC, in Las Vegas. I talked with Dr. Cools about working with medical colleagues across the country who also responded to mass shootings, about developing best practices to save lives. You know, I actually worked in Las Vegas as a journalist for a couple years before moving to Sacramento. And I remember going to UMC, University Medical Center, which is located between, you know, the north end of the Strip and downtown. And at that time, I actually toured your trauma center, and it's a level one. And at that time, I learned that it was the only level one of its kind west of the Mississippi. Is that still the case?
Yes. And it is what we call a standalone trauma center. So it is a facility that was built to care for patients that are injured. So we have our own emergency room that we call trauma resuscitation. We have our own CAT scanner. We have what we call an angio suite where we can stop certain types of bleeding without going to the operating room. We have our own blood bank that is kind of a satellite of our main hospital blood bank. We have 3 operating rooms that are literally just feet away from our emergency room. And we have an ICU that is sort of wrapped around those areas. So it's a facility that was built specifically for injured patients. Mm-hmm. So that is in terms of like west of the Mississippi, that's what's unique about that. There are just a few others in the country. So this really is very specialized care at all levels.
Just working in Las Vegas, I mean, surrounding hospitals, including yours, I mean, are used to emergency response. I mean, frequently it's busy over the busy nights, especially on weekends in Las Vegas. And I would imagine October 1st, 2017 was no exception prior to the mass shooting.
We're always sort of subject to surge from all of the activities. And we are such a tourist destination that in certain events, you know, for instance, New Year's Eve, a lot of people like to come to Las Vegas for New Year's Eve. We'll have a huge surge in our visitors, a certain number of them get injured and so forth. So we're used to visitor traffic, if you will, or getting injured and getting ill. But that is somewhat different from 1 October.
Yeah, of course. And also, I think leading up to it, I just want to set up some context before we get into the emergency response of that evening. Las Vegas has always been in the top 5 to 10 list of possible terrorist targets. How does that shape the measures that hospitals like yours have in place?
You're exactly right. And I think that really came to light after the 9/11 events. All communities look at what is the greatest risk? And, you know, terrorist activity was included in those. Every healthcare facility is required to have a disaster plan and to practice it. So you'd have ambulances with, you know, EMS personnel. You'd have, I'll call them actors, playing patients. And you would have actual hospital personnel who are on duty that day responding. That's really important to have realistic drills and often.
Well, moving to October 1st of 2017, there were more than 50 victims that were killed, hundreds and hundreds others that were injured. How does that medical response during a mass shooting of that magnitude differ from medical care provided every day in your trauma center?
Really good question. So on a regular day, which is busy, typically, we will sometimes get more than one patient at a time, but we as healthcare professionals, we're really trained to look at the individual patient that is getting our attention right then and there, and to give them our full attention and to do as much as we can for that individual patient. But in a mass shooting in particular, mass shootings are unique in that the patient's injuries are much more likely to require surgical intervention or blood, you know, to save people's lives. And the difference there is that we will get a very large group of patients essentially at the same time. And so when we get a large number of people, it can actually overwhelm a hospital. Like if they're all allowed into the emergency room, it can exceed actually the capacity. So it's really important that as soon as we know that we have a mass casualty event, we activate our disaster plan that I talked about a little earlier. And if we are fortunate enough to get advance notice, even a few minutes, which was actually the case in our mass shooting. And with the first notification, it's like, oh, you know, trauma center, you might get 5 to 10 patients. And then literally a minute or two later, we'd get a second report of like, you might be getting, 10 to 20 patients. Oh, it looks like a lot more. Could be 50 to 100 patients or more. So it's really important when we get information to indicate that our hospital, any hospital, could be overwhelmed by the victims to activate that disaster plan. And then there are other provisions that, which, you know, particularly in a hospital, is very important to set up an outside area that is called a triage area. And triage really means to sort. And let's just say, which was actually the case, you know, the whole team went from 0 to 20 patients on the inside, which is almost double our normal capacity for our trauma ER. But what I learned later is because we set up this outside area, which is exactly the right thing to do to sort patients, we actually went from 0 to 40 patients in about 5 minutes. So the
zero to 40 patients in five minutes.
All right. And so it's really important that that outside area be set up to sort the patient so that we get those that are greatest risk of losing their lives very quickly, get in to get treatment first.
Yeah.
And then those that are less injured, they clearly need to be treated, but not as urgently. And I think I'm really happy to report that we did have that outside triage area.
So you obviously had very important and crucial measures already set in place for that moment that became instrumental. But given that you're not only a trauma surgeon, you're also a professor in medicine, in what way did you feel unprepared or wish you had a framework for prior that you now can pass on to not only your medical facility, but others across the country?
So I would actually say that very early in my career, I was maybe a year out of fellowship when 9/11 happened, and I did my general surgery residency training in New York City. So when that happened, I not only realized that, you know, such a catastrophic event could happen in our country, and then it was quickly actually announced on the news that there was concern about Las Vegas in particular, I realized I needed to get additional training. So I used that as my call to action. So I actually pursued very significant additional training in disaster preparedness. And I taught it both in the US and overseas. And, you know, I was very grateful for that training because I think it helped me really quickly change gears from, you know, being on trauma call with one or two or a few more patients coming at a time to this huge surge of patients. So that practice And actually developing a plan, like on paper, is just so important, because when something happens, you just don't have time to figure it out.
Yeah, it was pretty much a reflex of yours, but years and years in the making with your training. In the research that you conducted, you also have expert recommendations from other mass shootings, you know, from Orlando, Florida to Parkland, El Paso. There's a handful of them. What were the common threads that you learned from all of these other mass shootings?
Thank you for that question. I just want to clarify one point that I was a co-author on a paper, and it resulted from actually our Uniform Services University of Health Sciences, which is kind of the military health sciences university, as well as several federal agencies coming together to plan a symposium. So they invited people from these six shootings to come together.
What did you learn from your peers who had went through something equally horrific in terms of emergency response? What did you learn from them at that symposium?
So we learned that, number one, we have a lot in common, and these are specific recommendations for mass shootings. The situation can change where sometimes all of the victims go to one hospital, and sometimes the victims are split between our hospitals. Some other areas of consensus were, again, sorting people at the scene, like where the shooting occurs, and trying to get them to trauma centers if they are really very injured. If they are not as injured, many times non-trauma hospital can manage those. And I think there was really consensus, again, that every hospital has to have the ability to send someone, a team of people outside the hospital, to do that initial sorting that I mentioned as well. Public education was also really important. So that has to do with training non-medical people to how do you stop bleeding? And so there's a course called Stop the Bleed, and this was really endorsed by, you know, I think everybody who attended. And we need to do more public education, because that can save lives as well, particularly if there's a delay in getting to the hospital or injured people are trapped.
One success amid all of this that I want to highlight is that you reported that no one who arrived at the hospital alive died in the care of trauma centers. I mean, that's incredible, given that you just previously said that you went from an intake of 0 to 40 in just 5 minutes.
I just want to clarify one point. I actually indicated in my trauma center that was the case. I haven't examined data in all the trauma centers. I think part of it is training. We were also very fortunate that we actually had two teams of trauma surgeons in-house. I had worked all day, and we were very busy. So I was actually still dealing with my patients from the day. The night team was already in house. We were actually preparing to leave the hospital. And I stood there with the trauma surgeon that night. I said, oh, let me just stick around for a few minutes when we get the first call that there could be a shooting on the strip. So I think we were also fortunate that we had two teams in place. But again, that's really important to have that plan of like getting people who could be mobilized. So we had nurses come from other areas of the hospital, since many patients arrived actually by private vehicle. The first people to arrive were thrown into the back of a pickup truck. So they didn't have IVs or anything. So the nurses were told to establish IVs and hang a bag of IV fluids. And just that, knowing that that's in our disaster plan and that actually happened, saved lives. So if they needed blood right away, we had an IV to give it. And since we have our own blood bank right in the trauma center, blood was readily available in fairly large quantities.
And not only bringing in additional medical staff, but also you leaned on Nellis Air Force Base in Nevada, yes. The military. What role did they play?
Huge role. So one of the recommendations is to really endorse military-civilian partnerships. So if a trauma center or hospital has a nearby military facility, to actually partner with them, train with them. And the military, because the healthcare professionals in the military, they need to always be ready in case there's war, right, or some other conflict. And they can stay as ready as possible when they're not deployed to a war situation by partnering with trauma centers, because the type of trauma that comes in trauma centers is the closest thing to war. And it was hugely important, and it really increased what we call our surge capacity so we could take care of even more patients.
Another recommendation that you had, and this, it sounds, it is obviously very logical and it sounds so simple, but when you're in the thick of it, especially in the initial moments and scaling up your response, was having a fresh day team in place. How do you visualize that happening when you're responding to such an unprecedented situation and having an influx of trauma patients into your hospital?
We just have the mindset of, you know what, I can't call in everybody tonight because tomorrow morning I need people to come in. So actually, some of the people who are not called in, some of them are already in bed. So some people, when they woke up the next morning, was the first time they actually heard about the shooting. And a few of them had a reaction of like, wow, why didn't you call me in? Well, we didn't call you in because we knew we needed you early the next morning and we needed you to be fresh and so forth. So that recognition, again, is just really important as part of the disaster plan.
On the front end.
On the front end. Absolutely.
I actually responded as a journalist. I was sent to Las Vegas that Monday, and I stayed there for the entire week. And a lot of my work was talking with families and in some cases victims as well as emergency responders. And I mean, the common thread, and I agree with you, was really just the power of community and so many people wanting to help. It just reverberated across Las Vegas in the best way. I'm curious about the aftermath. With your staff and your colleagues, what kind of recommendations do you have for hospitals and medical professionals to take care of their staff during a crisis that can span days and even the aftermath for months or even years later?
I'm just really proud of our community in that we continue to have free services available to, you know, patients or who were injured or people even had just emotional trauma, including healthcare workers. And those services continue to be available as we approach the fifth year anniversary. Our coroner's office, because there were so many people who died in our shooting, and many people who were at our concert either didn't have or dropped their identification and their cell phones. So we didn't know who these people were. And their families also, you know, had a difficult time determining where their loved one was, whether they were alive or dead. And so the coroner's office did a lot of the family reunification, and it was very traumatic for our coroner staff, so much so that our coroner actually applied for a grant to bring in additional counseling services, and something that I've never taken advantage of, so I probably don't fully appreciate the benefit, called trauma yoga. And actually had enough resources from this grant to offer those services to all hospitals in the Valley.
You mentioned that October 1st is going to be the 5-year marking this mass shooting. How are you doing?
I think pretty well, but it's still like when one looks back on one's career is just like just this huge event. I mean, as a trauma surgeon, and I think I can speak for a lot of my colleagues, those healthcare professionals see people who are shot, stabbed, beat up, you know, horrible things happen to them on a daily basis. But it's really different to be involved in caring for people who were basically out to just relax and take care of themselves in terms of their well-being, enjoy themselves, and someone decided that those people should die. And they had done absolutely nothing and didn't know the shooter. And like, it's just, I think the emotional burden of that was really significant. So I think it made us, I don't know, for myself, I think I felt really activated to try to help others.
And you are.
Other healthcare professionals.
Yeah, and you are doing so. Finally, what do you want listeners to take away from this?
This is, to my knowledge, the first publication on what we consider to be best practices from people who actually were involved in caring for the victims of mass shootings. There are a lot of other best practices out there, but, you know, we all think about, like, how would I handle this in this given situation? And what we added to it was real life experience of what actually worked and how can that help other communities really prepare. I do want to say a couple of other things as well, like calls for blood, like, hey, our community is short on blood. And yes, we think about, oh, you know, the people who will need blood. But if there is a mass shooting, there needs to be a lot of blood available. So from your community, when there's a call for blood, if you can help, I think that would be really good. And for your community as well, if you would like to have, if your listeners would like to have training and stop the bleed, their local trauma centers and sometimes many other organizations offer courses that really train non-medical people in how to stop bleeding. And that's really important. You know, we never know where one of these horrific events is going to happen, right? They've happened in movie theaters, schools, churches, elsewhere. We all need to be prepared to do our part. And in every single one of these shootings, there were huge acts of heroism, not only of medical personnel, but lay people, people who are not treated or not trained medically. They did everything they could to save lives. And if they're trained in how to stop bleeding, they can do even more.
Dr. Coles, thank you so much for joining us and all the work that you're doing.
Thank you. It's a whole group, huge number of people doing this work. And I think this is a tribute to the human spirit that we really want to do better and better and better and to share what we know with others.
Dr. Deborah Coles is a trauma and critical care surgeon at University Medical Center. She and her team provided crucial medical response during the 2017 Las Vegas mass shooting. Dr. Coles is funneling that experience into research to help others in the medical field to develop best practices to save lives. Still ahead, it is one of Sacramento's most beloved festivals, the Labor Day tradition known as Chalk It Up. We'll learn how it benefits local art programs. You're listening to Insight. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.